Good morning, Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and I hope you are having a beautiful spring day wherever you are. I have a wonderful guest with us today. Her name is Louisa Kolker, and she is a shamanic healer and licensed psychotherapist in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Ah, beautiful Santa Fe. What a great place to live. She facilitates a dynamic workshop series called the Transformation Workshops that blends emotional trauma resolution techniques with the shamanic journey, all within a ceremonial setting. She will share some of her history with us. And, of course, she, although she was born in the United States, she is descended from a long line of Central American doctors, psychiatrists, and curanderas. And she studied with some very interesting teachers along the way. So she's going to share all of this with us. Louisa, it is a pleasure and an honor to welcome you to Shaman's Keep.
Thank you, Caroline. I'm so glad to be here.
Wonderful. Well, you have followed such an interesting path to find your way to shamanism that I want to explore a little bit about how you have walked that path. But let's kind of start with when you were a child. You began showing signs at an early age of being able to communicate with spirits and with what most Americans call the supernatural, right? You had early signs of being able to do that?
I did. Starting when I was 6 months old, I had experiences of non-physical reality. And of course, you know, it wasn't until much, much later that I had any kind of framework to understand what was going on. But what I would call my first experience along these lines was when I was 6 months old. I had a dream that was a waking dream, and in it, I was lifted out of my parents' bed where I was lying, kind of surrounded by cushions like little babies are sometimes. I was kind of picked up and taken into their closet, and I dropped through a number of layers. It was kind of like going down an elevator and dropping. And, mm-hmm. you know, at the time, I just remember it being very frightening and disorienting. And I didn't really talk about that experience until I was 10 years old, and I told my mother about it, and she said, you can't possibly remember anything from that age. But then I drew a picture for her of the room that I was in and the art that was on the walls, and
wow.
described the bedspread and where the closet was, and she began to get uncomfortable with mm-hmm. That particular aspect of who I am.
Hmm. But your great grandmother or your grandmother was a curandera, right?
My grandmother, my mom's mother, Concepcion Palacios, was a medical doctor in Nicaragua, and she later moved to Mexico. And she, from what I'm told, she was the first female physician in Central America. And it was her mother, so my great grandmother, Baltazada, who was the curandera in a little village in Nicaragua. And I went to visit that village in 1996. And she was still remembered by some of the people in that village. Mm-hmm.
Well, no doubt you inherited some of her genes that, and possibly even some of her spirit guides that were coming in to work with you when you were just a baby.
Well, maybe. You know, this, all of this turns out to be rather more complex than anything I've read about. And my great-grandmother, 8 years ago, Baltazada, did show up in a journey for me, and she offered to be, well, she didn't offer, she told me she was helping spirit for me, particularly around physical disease and you know, physical problems. There were spirit guides around me, but from an early age, and a lot of my path, Caroline, has been about how to be able to tolerate the intensity of spiritual energies and also of my own inner, let's say, psychological energies that were abundantly and forcefully present in me from such an early age. It's a very disorienting, and you, I'm guessing you know what I'm talking about. It's not, this is not a walk in the park, having these kinds of awarenesses and having these kinds of huge spiritual and archetypal energies that flow into, you know, a child, one's body and psyche as a child and then as a teenager and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you didn't have anyone to talk to about it that could understand or explain to you what was going on, right?
That's right. I didn't until I was in my 20s, my mid-20s, when I met my first and my root teacher. No, but what I had before then were books, and I devoured biographies, especially biographies of women who were artists of some sort and or who were change agents in their times and in their cultures. I was hungry to understand how, in particular, how women had handled being overwhelmed with a sense of love for the world, and also a sense of perhaps being too vulnerable and not strong enough to handle that enormous sense of love and desire to be of service. So I looked to biographies, and I also looked to my father, who. My dad was born in this country. He's the psychiatrist who I mentioned in my bio on my website. So I looked to psychology. I looked to my dad because he was a very kind and wise person, and he had a structure for understanding the human psyche.
Mm-hmm. And did he help you understand yourself?
I have to say that it wasn't so much what I learned about his particular model of understanding the human psyche. It was more how I saw him interact with people. There was a quality of kindness and a quality of stability and maturity that drew people toward him and made them feel very comfortable in his presence.
That's wonderful. Okay, well, I noticed that the teacher you call your root teacher, Salajan, is that how you pronounce the name?
Her name was Ioana Salajan, yeah.
Ioana. I wasn't sure how to pronounce the first name. Yes, she was quite an interesting teacher. She was author of the Zen Comics. And what a sense of humor. What an experience it must have been to be around her all the time for 4 years. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, she did have a great sense of humor. She had an incredibly wry and dry wit. and an infectious laugh. And she was also tough. She was tough. She was kind of what I would call old school in the sense that her lineages of spiritual learning were not of the sort of warm, fuzzy type that a lot of people experience or want in these times. Ioana was, she was in the direct lineage of Rudolf Steiner, and she also had a strong background in sitting Zazen meditation. She had studied with some Zen masters well, there was one in particular in Great Britain who she studied with. And then she was a natural metaphysician. She was, she had an incredibly complex and organized body of metaphysical teachings that came through her at a very early age. I met her when she was in her, I guess she was in her mid-40s. And at the time I met her, she had just recovered and healed herself through the inner planes from stage 4 uterine cancer. It was, no one expected that she would have survived that, but she did. And when I met her at a 10-day retreat I did with her, this is in my, I think I was 27, at the end of the retreat, she pulled me aside, and coming from the fairly shame-based personal background that I had, or I just my own makeup, when she pulled me aside, I thought, "Oh God, what did I do?" And she looked at me and she said, "You have a gift." And she said, "I want to teach you everything that's been given to me."
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Hello. Hello, are you there? Well, they don't seem to have stayed on the line. Okay, well, I'm sorry to have interrupted you then. Okay, just a moment.
Interrupt me again if they call back.
Okay, all right.
If they call back.
Okay.
So anyway, that's my teacher, Ioana, and I studied with her just about every day for almost 4.5 years. And
wow.
It was a one-on-one apprenticeship, and it was challenging, and it was priceless, and sometimes I just marvel at the gift that that was. And I was in my 20s. I knew that something amazing was happening. I certainly did not see it and appreciate it with the perspective that I had, 20 years later, 30 years
yes.
later.
Yes. Well, oftentimes that's how it is. We look back and say, wow, why was I not aware what a wonderful thing I was experiencing back there? So what was the most important thing you learned from her?
The most important thing I learned from Ioana was I'm going to say two things, okay?
Okay.
One thing was to develop my natural gift for second sight. I had the ability to see non-physical reality, and it scared the what out of me. It scared me. It was unsettling because in my family, I come from a very academic,
yes.
very intellectually oriented family, and so part of me would judge my non-physical reality experiences as being crazy. So one of the things she did was she really helped me to harness and discipline my seeing on the inner plane. Then the other thing that she did was she really taught me that to become a healer is very serious business. It is not glamorous. It is not really fun. And it is a commitment that is extremely serious. So, once in a while I get a call from someone or an email or someone shows up in my office and they say, "Hi, I'm a shaman." And I'll say, "Oh, honey, really? Is that really what you want to be?" And there's Caroline, there's just such a, I think there's been such a glamorizing and sensationalizing of what it means to be on a shamanic path. And honestly, I have said at times, and I know this may sound a little bit of a downer, but this is not a path I would wish on someone who was not absolutely committed and assigned this on a soul level.
Absolutely. That's why I did the show I did last week, because I'm running across so many people. The internet seems to be filled with people that want to be shaman and are claiming to be shaman, and they're trying to dance through it and make the moves and look good and sound good. But real healing work is, as you said, very serious business. And sometimes we have to deal with some very serious entities and very serious conditions that if we were not really well trained and did not have really powerful helpers, teachers and power animals and all, we would not be able to have survived some of the things that we've gone through. And so I'm glad to hear you say that. It's very important people understand that this is not a glamorous thing and you just put on some kind of outfit and talk the talk. You got to be able to walk the walk, right?
You got to walk the walk, and it's kind of a choiceless choice, and it's 24/7. It is not work that I put down at the end of my day. And what you just said, I agree with that, that, you know, we must have very strong and loving guidance to stay steady and to stay present with these non-ordinary experiences. Mm-hmm. And the other piece that I've found, and I have really been focusing more and more on this for myself, but also in my workshops and sessions with people, is that what I have learned is that there is really no grounded expression of spirituality without emotional maturity. And unfortunately, or I should say notably, people who have the capacity to be very mediumistic also have a tendency to be rather undeveloped emotionally. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Mostly it's, I think, a case of them romanticizing the idea of being a shaman, or, you know, that they don't really understand the depths of the work that we do.
Well, I think that's true for the shaman wannabes. But mm-hmm. what I found, and I'm actually speaking from my own experience, that because I was able to go up and out of my personal emotional field so readily, so easily, I was easily distracted from what was going on in my own personal energy body, what was going on, the history that was contained within my own emotional self. And so there came a point where that shadow, because that truly is what Carl Jung meant by the shadow, it's the parts of ourselves that we kind of exile into our unconscious because they're not compatible with what brings us a feeling of being effective and having worth out in the world. So what gave me a sense of having worth and being effective out in the world was that I was mediumistic and I was empathic and I could, you know, connect with non-ordinary dimension. Mm-hmm. However, that was a very compelling distraction from the fact that I had a lot of historical emotional material still in my psyche that I had not gotten to the core of.
Mm. Well, when you step into shamanism, that will be peeled away, as I'm sure you found out. I never understood how much healing I needed personally until I started really walking the shamanic path and journeying and having people journey for me and workshops and things. And oh my goodness, we get healed along the way because it makes us more effective healers when we're whole and fully here ourselves.
I believe that's true, and I also know for myself that to the extent that I wasn't being in reality about my vulnerability and my imperfection and my woundedness, that my body was taking the hit.
Oh.
And, you know, and that my, I got reflections in my outer world that all was not well at a very deep level in me. And this is kind of where I started bringing in more of the emotional trauma resolution work that I had been exposed to and that I eventually really used for my own deep core healing.
It's you mentioned an experience when you were 14 years old that you say was initiatory, common to people that sometimes are led into shamanism, in which you felt that you were dying or that somehow you were not part of this world. Would you share a little bit about your experience then?
Yeah, so that experience happened, as you say, when I was 14, and because my maternal grandmother lived in Mexico City, up until my mid-teens, my family would go every summer and spend about a month in Mexico City to be with her. And so I think it was actually spring break of the year that I was 14. We went to Mexico, and we took a trip to a place up in the mountains, I think it was north of Mexico City, called Valle de los Leones, Valley of the Lions. And it was a long, windy road up the mountain. And when we got to this area, there were some Native women there with their craft, their pottery, and their blankets and so forth. And they were sitting on the ground on some spread-out blankets, and there was a woman there, one of these women, who kind of beckoned to me, and I knelt down to see her eye to eye. And when I did, I still can't articulate exactly what happened, but something happened, and I stood up very quickly, and I almost passed out. And when I stopped seeing stars, because I kind of had that cartoon experience of seeing stars, when that passed, you know, a few seconds later, all of my senses had been rearranged. I could hear people's thoughts. I would look at someone and could go into a single pore on their face and go into the molecular structure inside their body. I could hear people's thoughts. I experienced my visual field became completely rearranged, where I was seeing things in slow motion, and 1 second seemed to last about an hour. And I was, to say that I was scared is such an understatement. I even had my father, who, as I mentioned, was a doctor. I had him take my pulse, and he said my pulse was racing a bit, but Caroline, this experience went on for an entire year, and it included that at night I could see with my eyes closed, and so it was at this time I sometimes think of this as a kind of a loss of innocence, because I could no longer take for granted, or I could no longer indulge in the common belief that I am my body, or even that I am my mind, because all of those things were in that instant rearranged.
Did you have any other, did you talk with that woman that you had bent down to look at? The woman that obviously shocked your auric field somehow and opened all this up for you. Did you talk with her?
I didn't talk with her. And it wasn't for a long time. You know, it took a long time for me to actually connect those two events, because there was a moment of eye contact, and I have some ideas of what went on there, and I've done a lot of as you mentioned earlier, you know, we can't walk in this path and not be, you know, vigilant and not be investigating what's going on in, you know, in terms of our connection with the world of spirit. I think it was just time, Caroline.
Yes, she awakened you.
Yeah, it was just time, and that was such a seminal experience for me. It was after that I just could not believe in consensual reality. It ceased to enroll me in any way, which was a very lonely experience. On the other hand, I developed very strong relationships, loving relationships with helping spirits. They were the ones who were there for me. They were the ones who understood the kind of pain that I was experiencing.
That's awesome, because that's one of the things that often happens to someone destined to walk a shamanic path, is to have something startling that awakens them and jolts them out of the reality that we've become so programmed and accustomed to accept as reality. And there's so much more that's going on around us all the time, you know. Oh, hold on, my dogs. I should have put them out. Okay. All right. Now, I want to follow up on that with this interesting path that you've walked that led you into Zen, because that is so, of course, Zen is very, I guess, would be very comforting. Meditation would be very comforting for you if you're feeling not quite here or not quite a part of the world.
Yes. Well, I started my sitting meditation with Joanna back in Spain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we worked a lot with witnessing thoughts, witnessing sensations, so that there was this gentle and gradual disengagement from identifying, again, with the body and with the mind. So what I'd experienced at 14 in a quite, you know, spontaneous and shocking way, when I started sitting, you know, on my cushion and meditating and just watching and naming and labeling the thoughts and sensations that were arising, it was a way, again, I'm going to use the word of harnessing, an experience that had felt out of control and coming into some kind of compatible relationship with watching the mind and watching the body, rather than being terrified of, you know, the ways in which the mind and body can just fly out and you know, go just spin like the Twister in the Wizard of Oz. You know, there are ways.
Yeah.
Consciousness and conscious awareness is the great stabilizer of huge archetypal experiences.
Well, actually, that helped you hone your own skills, your gifts, to be able to be aware, to be aware of everything, to be consciously aware of everything going on around you, and whether it was visual or not. Because, as I said, there's so many things going on around us, and spirits, and so much going on around us that most of the world doesn't seem aware of. But to become aware of it, and to become aware that we are really all one, because that's when you get out of the body, you realize that you are not the body, and that everything is connected. It's like this huge network of life that we are a part of and we're connected with, and it's all one. Was that your experience?
Well, it has certainly been my experience when I was able to quiet down my central nervous system. Mm-hmm. And this is why I think meditation, I know that meditation has served me so well. It's also why working with learning what my emotions are and how to relate to my emotions and how to be what I call emotionally literate has helped me to make a much bigger space in myself energetically for unity experiences, which is what I think you're talking about, unity mm-hmm. consciousness,
yes.
where there is an experience of being in flow and of being related to everything and everyone. But when the psyche, when one's emotional, when my emotional self was in a high state of alert, the last thing that I can enjoy is a sense of unity consciousness, because my ego consciousness, you know, thinks I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how to work with the body, I think, is so important. It's been important to me. I love to dance. I do partner dancing with my with my partner, Franklin, and I love being outdoors, and I had to really train myself and push myself to land in my body, even because there's also, I found that I had a tendency to not want to be anchored in my body. I had a tendency to want to be up and out in the ethers.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
So that's what I was talking about. You know what I'm talking about? That it takes some practice to just
yes.
land in on the earth plane and in the body. And without that, spiritual experience is fleeting. It's just, you know, glimpses. But it's not, I found that until I was really able to harness and stabilize spiritual experience into my physical body and my emotional body, my spiritual experiences were not integrated with my
mm-hmm.
my life as a human being walking on the earth.
Well, I think probably some of that was due to you being the daughter of a psychiatrist and being raised with that kind of thinking that says, you know, if people are hearing voices and seeing things that aren't there, they have a mental problem. And so it was huge for you to finally realize that I don't have a mental problem. There are things there. You just aren't seeing them, you know, and to know
yeah.
that there's a spiritual world all around us that has been misunderstood and called many things, but it is very real.
Well, that's very astute of you, Caroline. I mean, really, you just got to the root of a lot of my inner work that I've had to do because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, my dad was my earliest mentor, and he was the last person who I could tell I was hearing voices and seeing legions of angels. You know, that he was a good guy, but he was, you know, part of the, you know, the church.
Yeah, the system. Yes, the system that says that's crazy.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
Yeah. You know,
so you had to unlearn a lot of things.
What's that?
I said you had to unlearn a lot of things in order to be able to accept your truth.
I did. I had to unlearn, and even more than that, I had to find a way to go so far back into the core of who I am, into my original naturalness, to find an authority, or let's say a sense of authenticity that felt safe to me. I mean, I had uncommonly good parenting with some, you know, some big glitches along the way, but as far as parenting in the 20th century went, I really did very well. I was very lucky. However, I really did learn progressively, stage by stage, how to go further and further back into my own self. And in fact, one of the ways that I teach people how to work with themselves energetically is I teach that we have a front body, a middle body, and a back body, somewhat similar to how we talk about there being a lower, middle, and upper world in shamanism. But I work energetically with the front, middle, and back bodies, and the front body is where we take on a lot of our acculturation. We take on what we've learned in school and from our family systems, And middle body is the bridge between that conditioned self and the back body. And the back body is the connection with source.
Yes, and that back body connection with source has been lost or disconnected by so many people. And the structures of our society actually, I think, had a lot to do with that. The church and academia, all of these people that want to say that all that exists is what we can see with our eyes and hear with our ears and examine under a microscope and weigh and measure. If it doesn't fit that criteria, it's not real. So, go ahead.
In this post-industrial and technological age, you know, there's so many great things. Like, you and I are able to do this interview together because mm-hmm. of technology. And as an Aquarian, I love technology. And we have become further and further disconnected from the rhythms and cycles of the natural world. And mm-hmm. that leads to an overdevelopment of the front body in the way that I'm talking about this. There's a survival connection with our intellects and with the social and religious and educational structures outside of us. Whereas if we went back even 150 years when you couldn't just go to a supermarket and get groceries, and where you really were at the effect of weather systems and mm-hmm. so forth. If just going back 150, 200 years, people were much more connected with their back bodies, which is also yes. connected with their instinctual bodies. They were also connected with their lower bodies, because that's the other way I work in my sessions and in my workshops, is I talk about the shamanic model of healing is about not about going up and out of your crown chakra, and mm-hmm. it's not about, you know, radiating your chakras outward. Instead, it's about dropping down and into your body, putting your energy roots in the earth, and it's about deepening back towards your spine, back towards your connection with source. So it's down and in, and in that way we can begin to connect with the inner wilderness in us that is a mirror reflection of the natural world with which we've lost a lot of relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that that break with the with nature basically has caused a lot of the emotional and depression and ideas of, well, lack of self-worth and all. People don't seem to be able to find who they are, their image. It's the disconnect with nature, and then the fragmented families that we have now, where people don't sit around and talk about their family history. They don't talk about things that Uncle Bob did, or, you know, or Grandpa so-and-so did. Children are growing up tied to the television and to their phone and to digital games and everything, and they don't have an image of who they are. They don't have a family image, and they don't have a connection with nature. And this is causing huge problems in the world, because let's face it, we are part of the animal kingdom, and our real connection with the spirit world is through nature. And this is something that I talk about a lot on this show. Okay, so go ahead and continue sharing. I love what you're saying.
Well, I find what you just said to be really relevant. And I was talking with a dear friend of mine recently about just that, this whole phenomenon of people becoming connected with their little, you know, black rectangles, you know, their iPhones and so forth. And I actually did a journey about this, Caroline, because I have such a love of things, technological and computers and so forth. So I did a journey to my helping spirits, and I asked them about what is going on with the internet? And what I was told was that we have, in a sense, begun engaging with a synthetic God, that the internet actually is an entity. It has a certain form of intelligence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the internet has been created through many, many minds, and that's reflected in how compelling the internet is. I mean, we can go to the internet for information, but we can also go there and you know, experience soul loss. I don't know if you've experienced that, but I know that if I sit on my computer for too long, and I'm talking even just word processing for a while, let alone Facebook, mm-hmm. but I have a feeling that I've had a little bit of soul loss. That some part of me has kind of been assimilated by the internet Borg, you know?
Mm,
interesting. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. And the truth is, yes, I haven't really called it soul loss, but it's certainly been time loss, because I end up sitting at the computer and I'm like, oh, I wonder about this. And I browse the web and I find all this information and I read and read and read. And, you know, hours go by and I get up and I'm like, oh my God, I needed to do this and this and this. And where did the time go? You know, it got eaten up by the internet. But by the same token, the internet is giving us the opportunity to share this kind of wisdom and these kind of perceptions about life and reality and everything with a huge audience that probably would never hear this stuff otherwise, you know? So Yeah, so it's like electricity. It's a power, and it can be used for good or bad. And so let's use it for all the good we can while we can. Okay.
Well,
I want to talk.
I agree with you. Yeah, and I just want to say one other thing about that, which was in the journey, I was told this is the time for people to we have an opportunity to really do some more growing up. You know, we're given all of this technology and this instant gratification and this incredible ability to connect with other human beings. So what is being invoked at this time for people who want to be aware of it is free will. And is, you know, we have, as human beings, I believe, and my helping spirits tell me, we have free will. So what am I going to do with this technology? Like you said, what am I going to do with this incredible energy source? Mm-hmm. I have to become a more mature person because I'm being given so many very, very rich and dynamic mediums for connecting with the internet, with people, you know, as you say, with other, you know, with fellow seekers. So. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as a negative thing, but I see it as, you know, it's kind of like when I first got my driver's license, I, you know, sorry.
You just wanted to drive. If you just wanted to be in the car all the time, right?
I wasn't entirely responsible as I should have been, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've gotten better at that.
Yes, we have to learn to control our addiction to the internet. But it's so wonderful to have everything right at our fingertips. I mean, never in the history of the world have people had so much knowledge and wisdom and information and amazing, beautiful pictures and just, you know, all of this at our fingertips. And but it is interesting because the internet seems to be gobbling up everything. It's gobbling up newspapers and news magazines and now it's gobbling up TV as well. You know, there's internet TV too. So after a while, everything that you want to do, you won't have a separate TV in the living room or a separate radio. Everything will be on the internet. And it's kind of, it's mind-boggling when you think about the vast resources that are just being gobbled up by the internet. And if anything ever happened that brought it down, do we have any backup?
Oh, it might be a good day.
We might actually have to look at each other and talk to each other again.
Oh, exactly. Spend more time in our gardens.
Yes, I love my gardening. So, well, I believe it's so important that we spend time with nature, and if it's just getting out in my own personal yard and digging in the dirt and planting a flower, it's a connection because the plants talk to us too, if you listen. And have you had any experience with communications with plants or trees?
I have starting about 20, well, almost 25 years ago. I worked a lot with the Bach flower remedies. That was one of the things that Ioana taught me. She wrote one of the first books in Europe about the Bach flower remedies. And there came a point where I started connecting with the spirits of plants in my own garden and asking them if they would do me the honor of telling me what their medicine was. And this was on a vibrational level. And I actually, for a while, made some vibrational remedies following the Bach remedy technique, you know, where you put blossoms in purified distilled water at a certain for a certain amount of time under the, you know, in full sun, that kind of thing. So there was that, but there's also I've had a connection with the with plant spirits because I personally, just with my very interesting and kind of finely wired brain chemistry, I haven't wanted to journey with the assistance of plant medicine, you know, on a physical level. So I have journeyed to the spirit of ayahuasca. I have journeyed to the spirit of peyote, and I've journeyed to the spirit of a number of other plants that have offered themselves as spirit teachers over
Wonderful.
the years. Oh, it's euphoric.
Yes.
And you know, very, you know, no muss, no fuss.
Louisa, I have enjoyed having you on the show today. I feel like we have so much more we could discuss. Would you like to be on the show again sometime in the future?
I'd love to be back on your show, Caroline. This has been a lot of
Oh.
fun.
Okay, great. Well, I'll talk to you after the show is over. We are out of time. So, I want people to know how to reach you. They can just go to Louisa Kolker. It's LuisaKolker.com. And, do you have another website or some other way they could, be in
They can
touch with
find
you?
me on they can find me on Facebook at Santa Fe Shamanic Healing Journeys with Louisa Kolker.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you. And I loved the things you were saying. It was great. Okay. And for all my listeners, next week we have a real treat. We have Elliot Cohen, who wrote Plant Spirit Medicine, will be my guest. And we'll get into talking with the spirits of plants on that show. So until then, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.